irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you make peace with food. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. Welcome to the post-diet revolution. If you'd like to join the show today, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. It doesn't have to be anything specifically related to food, weight, or body image. It can be whatever is weighing on you, whatever is bothering you, because food is not actually the real problem. It's not what you're eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at you. So when you deal with that, those real underlying root issues, everything changes. Okay, so I want to start with a question from JC, who writes, "Every day I wake up and tell myself I'm going to be good and stick to my meal plan. I have an egg white omelet for breakfast and some fruit for lunch. I have a Greek yogurt, but then I get home and blow it at dinner. I eat the kitchen. What can I do to stop this cycle?" Well, JC, there are two reasons why people eat the kitchen, as you put it. Two reasons why people binge. One of them, believe it or not, is that they don't eat enough during the day and they are starving, so starving by the time they get home from work that they are ravenous, they cannot get full. Another reason people binge is that they're eating for emotional reasons, to resolve some kind of psychological conflict with food. So say you had a tough day at work and you feel really upset, just one of those awful yucky days. You get home and you just want some ice cream and you end up eating more than you wanted to. But you don't, or the other thing is some people don't know why they're binging, because it's hidden from them, which is why it seems as if food is the problem, although it is not. So quick refresher on my food mood formula. Smooth and creamy foods like ice cream are indicating a need for comfort. Filling, bulky foods, pizza, pasta, bread, muffins, cake, that kind of thing, that indicates that you are filling a void or that you're feeling lonely. And anything crunchy, chips, carrots, although I don't know many people who binge on carrots, chips, of one sort or another, crackers, anything with a crunch, even crunchy cookies, that indicates that you are feeling angry. So if you are eating and eating and eating and you don't know why and you can't connect it to something that happened in your day, use this food mood formula to help you figure out what's going on and then address those underlying issues. Give yourself comfort in a different way. Call a friend. Deal with that inner void. Express your anger with words. So JC, from what you said in your email, it sounds as if you may not be eating enough. Greek yogurt by itself is really not enough for lunch. So you might be getting to that place where you're so ravenous you eat the kitchen. But, I'm going to give you some other things that you can do to break the cycle in case it's not about that. And for all of you out there who are asking the same question, here are some things you can do. First of all, plan regular meals and snacks. Because getting yourself on a regular eating pattern can be really helpful to overcoming that binging cycle. Just try to have 3 meals and 2 snacks. I'm not a dietitian, but I do know that when my patients actually eat more, they're often end up binging less. So if that means scheduling meals on your to-do list of the day, do that and really try to go no more than 3 or 4 hours between meals, because when you are putting food in your system, it reduces the urge to binge that comes from extreme hunger. So if you're a person who is getting way, way, way too hungry, that is something that you want to pay attention to. Number two, track the triggers. You may think you're being triggered by food, but it's really a situation that's triggering you. Food is the solution. Food is the solution to the problem. So one thing you can do is keep a journal to document how you feel before and after each meal, each snack, and also if you end up binging, what was going on, what was the situation, what were you feeling? And make a note of the times so that you can start getting kind of a log and look for patterns of, you know, what's going on. Is there a pattern of feeling certain emotions? Do you always turn to chips when you're upset and angry? Are there environmental triggers, like being in a certain social situation, or even, you know, going by that receptionist with the huge jar of Hershey's Kisses? You know, you walk by it every day and take a few. Is that something that's kind of an environmental trigger that maybe you can pay more attention to? So really note the patterns, the events, and the emotions associated with whatever is going on with food. That can all help you find your triggers in addition to the food mood formula. Find alternatives for those trigger situations. So if you have kind of a habit of eating while you're watching TV and you end up binging on a Netflix show and on ice cream or popcorn or pizza or something, you can plan around that. You can plan to not eat while you watch TV. That's something that a lot of people find hard to do at first, but then they get very used to it. If you have to be multitasking and doing something while you're watching TV, then maybe crochet, walk on the treadmill, you know, do something that is generative instead of eating, because that kind of mindless eating can just, you can really eat so much and not even realize it. And then your show's ended and you realize, oh my God, that whole pizza is gone. Or, oh my gosh, I can't believe I ate all that. So that's something else that you can do. Stop labeling food good or bad, because seeing yourself as bad or a failure for eating a quote unquote bad food will not help you get to a healthier place. All it does is increase your feelings of guilt, which can actually make you more likely to binge. You feel guilty and then you eat something to make you feel better, and the cycle continues. So when you take away the good food, bad food, you also take away the good me, bad me, and can cultivate a feeling of, you know, just feeling good about yourself because of who you are, not feeling bad about yourself because of what you ate. Okay, another suggestion, trash the diet books. Trash the diet books. And the magazines, and maybe go on a little bit of a diet of social media. So why? Because when you are looking at some airbrushed model on the cover of your monthly fitness magazine or whatever magazine, it's probably going to bring up negative thoughts about your body. Hold that thought. I have a caller. Welcome, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago.
Hi, Brian from Chicago. What's going on?
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So here's my question. As you know, the gym and working out and physicality play a really important part in my life. And, you know, I have friends who share that feeling, but I have other friends who I think would like to get there or just would like to be a little bit more fit or just a little bit more stress-free and get to the gym just to relieve other parts of their life, like busy work or busy family. And there's one friend in particular, and I've offered her to come with me to the gym. You know, I'll pay for her day membership and maybe show her a couple of things. And I think she really wants to go. She said that she really would like to go, but she's very self-conscious. She has a little bit of a weight issue, not anything, you know, that is like sort of out of hand, but, you know, she would like to look maybe a little bit different or feel a little bit different. And she kind of imagines the gym as a place where people are either working out or sort of judging each other, which really has never been my experience. But she's just very self-conscious about how she looks, and that prevents her from going. So, you know, I know that it's not necessarily a judgmental place, and I've tried to impart that to her, but she still really kind of feels bad about herself when it comes to, you know, even down to just getting into gym attire. So what could I do to help her just, you know, maybe get to a less self-conscious place? Because it's not like she's forcing herself to do something she doesn't want to do. She really wants to go, but this is preventing her from going. So is there anything I can do to help her?
That's a great question, and this is something I hear all the time. People want to go to the gym, or they want to go to the pool, or they want to go do something that's healthy and physical and active, or they want to ride a bike, but then they imagine people looking at them and thinking negative things, and that makes them feel so self-conscious that it precludes them. They won't let themselves do what it is they want to do, like your friend. So one thing, it sounds like have you had a conversation with her like, hey, it's going to be okay, people aren't judging? Like, you've probably had that conversation, right?
I'm guessing. Right. And I've also told her, you know, look, if you look around and see somebody who's just really, really fit, and maybe that feels a little intimidating, or you kind of focus in on them and say, they must be the ones who are looking at me in a particular way, you can find the majority of people who were there like you, who are just there trying to accomplish things, and who probably look at you and say, oh, cool, she's here too, everyone's here trying, and that's awesome. But I don't know that necessarily, that's sort of like, it doesn't break through the emotions that she has.
Exactly. So you've tried to reassure her and give her kind of a reality test and say, this is the reality, but it doesn't go anywhere, because what she's doing is probably projecting her own judgmental thoughts about herself into the gym people and back at her. So what you might want to do is have a conversation with her like, well, what do you think specifically people are thinking? And she's going to say, oh, you know, they're going to think that woman is so out of shape. And they're going to think this, and they're going to think that. And then maybe you point out to her that those are actually her thoughts about herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that what she can do is, the key to not being so self-conscious is to first challenge your own self-judgmental thoughts, but also to be an observer. So to go to the gym and not mind read and not think about what other people are, how they're judging you. Be an observer means eyes out, not eyes on. Tell her, like, let's go and just see if you can just go for 45 minutes and only think about what you are seeing, what you think, what you feel, what you want. And because when you're an observer and you're thinking, well, what do I think about that, you know, that whatever? What do I think about taking that class? Or what do I think about what that person is wearing? Or what do I think about that person looks like a nice person? Or what do I think about that person who's scowling? What do I think? When you're the observer and your attention is outward, you don't feel like you have this giant spotlight on you, and that spotlight of everyone looking at you and thinking bad thoughts, that's what makes people self-conscious.
Would it be okay to kind of suggest to her, hey, look at that person over there, what do you think of them? And being the kind of person she is, she would say, oh, they're here, they're trying, they look like they're getting a good sweat, it looks like they're kind of enjoying this. And would it be okay then to say, so since none of those things that you are thinking about that person are negative, why would you imagine they must be thinking something negative about you? Maybe they're not that kind of bad person. Maybe they would think exactly the same thing, like, oh, cool, this person's here and I'm here, and, you know, maybe I'll walk up and say hey or something. That they're thinking anything but the sort of self-destructive thoughts that you assume.
I think it's a great thing to say. And to also remind her that that whatever the negative things that she thinks people are thinking of her, because ask her that. What specifically do you think people are going to think? I am pretty sure that everything she thinks that people will think of her is what she thinks of herself.
Right.
What she thinks of herself.
That's great. Yeah. That's a great suggestion.
And then kind of point
cool,
that out.
Cool, because I'd love for her to come. I think she'd enjoy it. I hate to see her sort of get in her own way.
Well, I hope that this helps, and you're a good friend. And Brian, you spend a lot of time at the gym.
I do. It's the thing that I call you about. So hopefully, it doesn't leave the impression that this is literally all I do all day every day. Although that wouldn't actually be so bad.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Anything is good in moderation. You know, if you're living at the gym and lifting weights 8 hours a day and you're not some kind of professional weightlifter, then that's probably not a good thing. If you're not going to the gym at all, or getting any exercise, that's probably not a good thing. But if you're going and you enjoy it and you're bringing your friends and feeling healthy, then that is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a communal thing. You know, it is something that people do that you end up having in common with people. You know, you meet friends there. It's always easier to make friends when you have that sort of common thing to talk about. But I really actually have other parts to my life, believe it or not.
Well, and you know, when you have fulfilling connections and fulfilling relationships or of any level, even if it's just sort of acquaintance at the gym, sometimes those acquaintanceships can turn into friendships, but when you have fulfillment in your connections with other human beings, people are much less likely to feel empty and to have that void and to fill up on food as a substitute.
I agree. Well, I've been ahead of my time even before I knew to call you.
Well, I'm glad that I'm glad you're calling. You always ask great questions that I know that the audience out there will benefit from, as well as you and your friend. You sound like a really good guy, and I hope you can talk your friend into going, and you know, let us know how it goes.
I will. I'll call you back and let you know how it went.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye, Brian.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Aw. It's so hard when you think that your actual thoughts are real. You know, like so often we take our fears as like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym and people are going to look at me and they're going to think, oh, you know, she's really out of shape. And then that fear becomes a reality, and then you don't go to the gym and you end up feeling bad before, another caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, this is Melinda from Beverly Hills.
Hi, Melinda from Beverly Hills. What's going on?
Right. So I wanted to say that what you're opened the show with the food mood theory applies to this. So you've kind of answered my question, but here is I'll give it to you anyway. So I have I think what I've been doing is the pattern I see is when I come home after a weekend getaway exhausted and it's late at night and I'm not hungry but I'm exhausted, I'll eat 3 bowls of ice cream. Another time I worked all day, went to an event, came home again tired, ready to go to bed, but I had 3 bowls of Moose Tracks ice cream. And so one bowl led to 3, and I was not hungry. So I feel like what you've been talking about with triggers maybe are that I'm eating because of a void.
Or actually, this is a great question, because what I'm hearing is actually not so much emotional, but physiological. So maybe you're eating to wake up. Like what you're saying is the commonality is exhaustion and tired. And maybe you need some comfort because your day has been really intense or whatever, because that's why you're exhausted. But additionally, I wonder if there's something to do with wanting to kind of use sugar to wake up and enliven yourself a little bit. What do you think about that?
And instead of giving in to sleep and say, the day's over, I did the best I could, just go to bed.
Have exactly.
Have whatever. Brush your teeth and put on face cream, go to bed. Give, you know, sign off for the day. And instead, but one leads to three. So that's what I'm saying is, like, how is, I don't know, maybe that's the sugar that people experience when they're eating something rich and chocolatey, that it, one leads to two leads to three.
Well,
or that it really takes three to fill me up. And I mean, I don't know. It's kind of,
no, you're asking, this is a really good question, because you're saying, mm-hmm. Hey, what's going on with me? That's and why three? So,
right.
So I want you to think back on the last time it happened. When was that?
That would have been coming home from a weekend getaway, and which was fun and successful. And it was 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, or 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, and I unpack and go to bed is what I should have done. And instead, I had three bowls of Moose Tracks. And it was delicious, but I feel like then I was in an ice cream coma, and then I fell asleep.
So what do you imagine you would have been feeling had you not gone to ice cream? Forget the sleeping. Just stay with what might you have been thinking about or feeling? What might you have had some feelings or thoughts about the weekend, even though it was successful? What would you have been left with?
Right. That maybe there were some things that didn't go the way I wanted, or it took so much out of me that now I'm exhausted or something, that it left me hungry,
mm-hmm.
but not hungry. And that left me, what did you say?
Hungry for
comfort. Hungry.
Or yeah. Psychologically hungry, like hungry for comfort.
Psychologically
hungry for
yeah.
something.
Okay. Well, I don't think I can answer that on the spot. I'm going to have to think about it, but I think I'll come up with some things.
Yeah, because if you're turning to food, you're turning away from something else. So there's mm-hmm. the exhaustion piece, which is, hey, I don't want to go to bed. I want to keep my day going a little bit longer. I know that on the days that I come home super late after working all day, I don't want to just go to bed. I want to have some more of, I want to have some downtime. I want to have some, you know, I don't want to watch a show on Netflix or something and just relax. I don't want to go right to bed. So sometimes people may use eating as that little buffer between exhaustion and bedtime, even though what they really need is to go to sleep. So there's that part, but then there's the why three. So the three might indicate something emotional is going on. Are you the kind of person who takes care of other people?
Sure. Yeah, big on arranging and coordinating.
Okay, so you mm-hmm. take care of other people, and maybe when you're on this weekend, were you taking care of people? Were you like in the role of more of the nurturing person, or I don't know who you were with or what was going on, but would you say that that's more so your role?
Definitely.
So you take care of everybody, and ice cream takes care of you.
Yeah. So I have to think about how I can, what to replace that with. And I think when you opened the show, you were talking about that is, you know, what would fulfill you. Plan, like I said, I wasn't hungry, so I wouldn't be planning a snack, but it could be planning. And I don't think, oh, take a warm, comforting bath or get go on the yoga roller and relax. I don't think of those things. I think ice cream.
Mm-hmm. But there's finding a different solution, but there's also looking at what is the setup to even get to that place in the first place. So maybe if you're someone who's always giving, you want to look at how can you let people give to you or something like that. So that it's not only just the situation when you get home from work, but it's whatever ice cream is giving you, you can get in different ways. You need to be taken care of or comforted or nurtured. Who can what people or situations can do that for you? I think that when you do that, you might not be so reliant on ice cream.
Right. All right, that's helpful. I need to think it through a little bit this is really helpful. And I really love the line that you said to Brian, eyes out, not eyes on. I mean, that's huge, and that applies to so much. And I appreciate all of your shows. There's always so much takeaway for everyone. So keep it up.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for calling. And please let me know how it goes.
I will. Okay. Thanks, Dr. Nina.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that Melinda brings up a very important thing that I sometimes neglect to say, which is that people can use food to keep themselves up. Like instead of, I'm tired, I need a nap, I'm tired, I need to eat something. So that's another thing to look at. So, great calls today. Thanks, Brian and Melinda. Awesome. Okay, so I was talking about trashing the diet books, because diet books, magazines, all of that stuff, because when you have diet books, you look at them and they remind you of all your failed attempts at eating healthier. Oh, I was on that diet, but then I went off of it. I should have stayed on it. Or, I should eat this, or I should. Anything that makes you say, I should get rid of. Anything that makes you feel bad about yourself, get rid of. Get rid of all the books or magazines that make you feel inadequate. That's pretty much the bottom line. If you feel inadequate because of a magazine or a book or something like that, then it needs to be removed from your house. So, and diet books also can make you more likely to be going on another diet. And we're part of the post-diet revolution, right? No dieting. Diets fail because the anticipation of deprivation always makes you want something more. If you are telling yourself, I can't have pizza, ice cream, what have you, chocolate, whatever, you're going to want that more. And you're going to possibly eat more of it because you're going to start your diet on Monday, right, or tomorrow. So I'm going to eat all this today. And so I'm going to start tomorrow. And that just sets you up for failure. Diets also fail because they focus on what you're eating and not why. Right? They focus on food, not what is eating at you. So diets ultimately fail. I mean, they're great as long as you're on them, but they're unsustainable. And they eventually fail. So the key is to be part of my post-diet revolution, give up dieting. Give up dieting. Learn to be an intuitive eater. Heal your heart so that you don't use food for emotional support. And live your life, right? Free yourself from constantly thinking about, oh my God, I ate that. What can I eat? How many calories have I had? How many grams of fat? What am I going to eat for dinner? What am I going to eat tomorrow? Oh, it just is too much thinking. There is another way. And that's why you're listening, right? You are ready for that other way. And I am here to lead the way. Okay, so you're going to trash the diet books and you're going to trash the bathroom scale too. The bathroom scale has got to go. It does not measure your value. And you know what? Most people have a very love-hate relationship with the bathroom scale. When they get on it and they like the number, they feel good about themselves, but then they get on it and they don't like the number, and then they feel bad about themselves. Well, a piece of metal and plastic should not have that much influence over your self-esteem. You should not be feeling good about yourself because of what you weigh. And here's another caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry from Burbank. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank. I'm well. How are you? What's going on?
Oh, boy. I just heard you say you've got to get rid of what makes you feel inadequate. Can that include family members?
Well, you can't get rid of them, but you can create a protective shield, like a force field, like a Star Wars force field around yourself, so that they can send their verbal missiles your way, but it just doesn't land. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, well, now I'm joking about what's I'm going to say next, but I have people who know people who make my mom go away. It's, you know, but you know, let me tell you what's going on. And I know this deviates from the diets don't work, which they don't. And diet books are a joke. I see new ones every day that are hilarious. The titles, you know. But my elderly mom, who I live with, has had very severe sciatica for about 3 weeks, and in the last week. Genuinely painful, extremely painful. She spent a couple nights in the hospital and had an epidural and all of that. But throughout, the complaining has been, you know, unending. And I found out just yesterday she hasn't been taking her pain medication like she should. And I know for certain that despite her age and despite the very real pain, she's milking the whining to express things that she doesn't want to express otherwise. It's going through her body and being the placeholder for, you know, her hubby. I look very much like him and all that. I'm getting beaten up over it. She milks the pain. Again, I can't say this enough. It's very real, but she's just milking it like a severe hypochondriac.
So I can understand that would be very annoying, that here's someone who doesn't take pain medication and then complains that she's in pain. So would you like a strategy for how to deal with her?
I told her yesterday that if you don't take your pain meds on time, stop complaining, please. But go ahead.
Okay, so... you be her, and I'll be you. What does she say?
Oh, this hurts so goddamn much. I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, this pain is just too... Oh, this pain. Oh, and then when she sees a lab coat, she feels better.
So I'm going to be you. I'm going to be you. Just be her for a second. Okay. Oh, I feel so much pain, right? So say the one last thing from as mom.
Mm-hmm. I missed that part.
Say one last thing as mom.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I want to go on. Oh.
Mom, boy, yeah, you are really in a bad place. You're in a lot of pain, and it really sucks. You're in a bad place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then what?
And that acknowledges her whining.
Then what would she say?
I use that word very carefully, and it is a protective shield. Just say, "Yeah, I see you're in a lot of pain."
Yeah.
I see that.
Because then.
And just. Yeah.
Then she has nothing to come back against, and she might do it a couple more times. Oh, you just don't know how bad it is. Oh, yeah, yeah. And you say,
yeah.
You say, I don't know why I made her my Yiddish grandmother, but I just did. Oy.
Yeah.
Then you say, yeah. No, I know. It's bad. It is. It's really bad. Then she has no place to come back at you.
Right. My saying, I wish I could help, is just gas on a fire.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Got it.
All you do is reflect back. This is the worst pain I've ever been in. Yeah. Boy, that's bad. I can see that. Whoa. Wouldn't want to be you.
I'm going to tattoo that on the inside of my left arm so I can remember that. I see you're in a lot of pain. I can see that.
Yeah.
That's awful.
That's all you need to do. Over, and then she's going to stop. Because as long as you don't give her something, if you say, but mom, you really need to take your pain, then, as you say, gas on a fire, and then you end up being frustrated and helpless and angry and pissed off, and you want to shake her, and then you might turn to food, and the cycle continues. That's why, you know, again, it's not what you're eating that's the problem. It's what's eating at you. This is what's eating at you when you can find a new way of dealing with mom, and she sounds very frustrating. This is her way of getting something, and when you give it to her, validation, just validate her. Just validate what she's saying. She's going to stop.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and keep it, what I'm here saying, keep it almost moronically simple for my sake. And, you know, aim that at the moron. Okay, that's being judgmental, but I'll stick with it. That's how pissed off I am. So I will do that. I'm actually going to print that out, just as simple as that, and carry it with me when I'm downstairs with the matriarchal hypochondriac.
And don't get into the trap of trying to help. Because that, why is that a trap? Because logically, it sounds very reasonable. She's in pain. She's not taking her pain medication. You want to point that out to her. Except she has more than three living brain cells. She knows that the answer to pain is pain medication. So therefore, it's not logical. It's psychological. Something is going on that she's getting, some secondary gain that she's getting from being in pain. And that's why you don't want to be in the trap of trying to help. Because trying to help, it keeps you in the land of the logical. And nothing will help.
Yeah.
But just...
Go ahead, sorry.
Just simply validating it will address the psychological part. So
I do. I've never vehemently disagreed with you on your program before, but I have to do that now. When you said three brain cells, I think that was a high estimate.
I said she had more than three living brain cells.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll give you up to 10, but that's when the pain kicks in and her need to whine takes over. I guess I'm the dummy for trying to help, but I will.
Well, we're not going to call ourselves names. My point was that she knows, right? She knows that pain medication will help her not be in pain. So if she's not taking it, any attempt you make to get her to take it, you're in a power struggle. And you want to avoid the power struggle.
Right. And she's just pissed off at my dad. And, you know, going back to a bad marriage, I can get started, but it's not time now. You know, and that's all embodied at me, not only her husband, quote unquote, but the identified patient. And getting it doesn't mean a damn thing unless I do what you say on this one. I word for word, you're right on.
Well, I hope it helps. It's very frustrating when you get into that place with anybody, whether it's your mom or you've mentioned, you know, your sister, I think on the show, and a brother that you get in these kind of power struggles with, where the key is to just not engage them. And when someone is fighting to be right, let's say, and you say, oh yeah, you're right, they can't fight you anymore. So sometimes
nothing wrong with getting up and leaving and just going away. I'm going to go, you know, do some work at the local Starbucks and start my night job. I'm not going to be here. Getting my body where it needs to be, away from a toxic situation as well. But just, I'm going to be a drone, you know, and just drone that one thing. You know, I think that's brilliantly simple. There you go.
And keep practicing self-care, because self-care, you know, if no one else is taking care of you, you have to take care of you. And that
exactly. Okay. All right. That's great. I'm really glad I called.
I'm really glad you called as well. And call me back. Let me know how it goes.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Bye for now.
All right. Bye.
Well, it's interesting. Larry was just, you know, talking about this situation, and I mentioned self-care because that is the next thing on my list. self-care has to be a priority. And self-care is about more than taking care of your body. I had this one person say to me that she was the queen of self-care. I know I've mentioned it before, so if you've heard me talk about this, well, you're going to hear it again. And if you haven't, check this out. This woman tells me she is the queen of self-care, and she can't understand why she still feels terrible about herself and why food is a problem when she is the queen of self-care. And I said, well, what do you mean? What makes you the queen of self-care? Your worship? No, I didn't say that part. I wanted to, but I didn't. And she says that she gets manicures and pedicures and facials, and she has her hair blown out, and she gets massages and, you know, all of this stuff. And she's like, see, I there's nothing else I can do. I'm the queen of self-care, but I feel lousy. And I told her, those things are not self-care. Those things are grooming. And I said, I'm not talking about that part of yourself. That's your body. And she looked at me and said, well, what other self is there? So she was a extreme example. And she had to learn that your self does not only pertain to your body. Your body is actually the holder of yourself. Your self is the part of you that thinks and feels and wants and has a range of emotions and is creative, is maybe spiritual, is intellectual, is relational. All of these things are parts of yourself. Self-care is also your relationship to yourself, the way you talk to and think about yourself and your body. One of my favorite quotes, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left, right? So we want to talk to yourself, talk to your body in a kind, loving, supportive way. Treat yourself as you treat your friends. Another tip is, get some help, right? You don't have to do this alone. There is help out there. Everything from free groups to professionals like me who can help you. Don't give up. There is help and there is hope. So I want you guys all to know that you can change your life. You can change the way you relate to yourself and to food. Whether you have a full-blown eating disorder or an unhealthy, unhappy relationship to food or just whatever it is, you can change and you can liberate yourself and free yourself from all of these behaviors and thoughts about food. And on that note, someone had perfect timing. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Nina. This is Shelby.
Hi, Shelby. Nice to hear from you again. What's going on?
Yeah, I just wanted to call you and kind of give you a little update on what's going on with what's kind of been eating at me. I talked to you, I don't know when it was, maybe like a month ago, about a situation that I had going on with in my family with my mother-in-law.
Yes, I remember that.
We had an episode, you know, like with her best friend's daughter and all that stuff. I kind of went over that with you.
Yes, and as I recall, it was something about she was very envious of you and as a result was being very mean and toxic.
Exactly. Well, it's been, let's see here, 2.5 months. And my mother-in-law still hasn't tried to reach out to me or anything since the episode happened at her best friend's funeral. She hasn't tried to call me or anything. I mean, she's talked to my husband and makes comments that she thinks, you know, that I'm probably still mad at her, but still hasn't tried to reach out to me at all since the situation.
How does that affect you? Because I can understand, you could be hurt, you could be relieved, you could be a number of things. So how is that affecting you, this sort of silent treatment?
I'm I'm just kind of blown away. I mean, that she wouldn't try and contact me or reach out to me, considering, you know, who I am. And, you know, I'm the mother of her grandchildren, and I guess I'm just really shocked and kind of relieved, but kind of a little bit worried about what the end result's going to be.
So would you say that, because shocked is sort of a cerebral reaction, I wonder if you feel hurt somewhere in there, that here this woman, this the nasty woman who is the daughter of your mother-in-law's best friend, was really mean to you. So your mother-in-law didn't stand up for you. She didn't defend you. She didn't protect you. And now she hasn't done anything to recognize that her part in that. She hasn't come to you and said, I'm so sorry, I didn't say anything, I should have said something. She doesn't care.
I am really hurt that this has just been, you know, ignored and kind of swept under the carpet for all these years, that she's never wanted to stand up for me with the problems with these people, you know, with her best friend and the daughter. I mean, she's just ignored it all these years. And then this big blowout happened back in April.
So this is part of the pattern.
Right.
What does your husband say about all of this?
He just calls and, you know, checks in with her because of it being his mom. He, you know, feels the obligation and just knows how I feel and doesn't really want me to feel like I have to do anything. I mean, he just kind of deals with her and doesn't want me to have to do much because he knows what I've been through with the whole situation.
Is there something that you wish he would say?
Well, I really don't know what could be said or done about this. I guess I would feel better if she acknowledged the situation and how long it's gone on, and, you know, just, I guess, maybe acted like she knows that she's wrong. I guess that would make me feel better.
It doesn't sound like she's someone who has shown herself to be capable of that. You know, if she has kind of chosen someone else over you repeatedly over a period of years, it doesn't sound like she's the kind of person who will stand up on her own volition and say, my bad, I've treated you badly, I own it, and I'm sorry. I mean, that would be nice if that would happen, but it's very unlikely. So I guess you have a choice, Shelby. You can either wait for her to wake up, which probably won't happen, and then, or you can reach out and say, can we have coffee and talk about this? Because I'm very hurt, and it's not that I'm only mad at you. I'm hurt. It's a pattern. We need to resolve this. You're the mother. You're the grandmother of my children. I want to make this right, but you have to meet me halfway.
And with that, I mean, I don't really know if I'm going to get anywhere with putting myself through that. She's just going to probably bring up all kinds of old things in the past that are bothering her that she's jealous of, you know, with my side of the family. She'll just keep beating me up with other things. I don't really know if I want to put myself through that.
Okay, then if she's just not capable of that, if she's the kind of person who is defensive and critical and judgmental and doesn't take responsibility, then that would be a bad situation to put yourself in, and you're going to have to just learn to reconcile yourself to the fact that this is not a person who's going to take responsibility. She may be, you know, a grandmother, but with age does not come wisdom. And she is just stuck in her place. She's positioned it as you're mad at her rather than she did something hurtful to you again. Mm-hmm. And coming to terms mm-hmm. with that, kind of reconciling yourself to that is the only thing you can do. She's not going to change. So mm-hmm. what are you willing? Oh, Shelby, our time here is almost up. So will you call me back again and we can keep talking about
Definitely.
This?
Definitely. Yes, we
yeah,
will.
Because I think a lot of people can relate to difficult mother-in-laws, difficult mothers and fathers, all of that. So I'm sorry to cut you off. We're just at the end of our time. But thank you for calling me today. Call me back.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye. So that's our show today. Thank you for joining me on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio, where I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. I will be here next week, 4th of July. So if you have the day off, tune in and give me a call. Listen live or listen later on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like the show, please leave me a review, because the more reviews I get, ratings and reviews I get on iTunes, the more people I can reach and the more people I can help, which is what this is all about. So thank you so much. Have a great week. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.